15th. And I'd like to open a public hearing and work session on SJR 4A. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. SJR 4 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to remove provisions fixing age for mandatory retirement of judges and provisions allowing legislative assembly or people to fix age for mandatory retirement of judges. We first proposed an amendment to people for their approval or rejection at the next regular general election. This comes to you with no revenue impact. The fiscal statement was issued on the measure regarding the cost to the Secretary of State's office of putting this on the ballot measure. This comes to you from your Senate with 30 aye votes. And Secretary of State's office.
And Mike MacArthur, would you like to say some things?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I just wanted to make one point that I don't think has been made before. This bill, or this measure, also affects county judges, of which we have seven.
Could you please identify yourself?
I'm sorry, Mike MacArthur, Association of Oregon Counties. Mm-hmm. This bill also affects county judges, of which there are seven, one of which I know didn't run last time because of this measure, and one, my president this year, is 72. So it also affects that group, and so therefore we think it's a good idea.
Great. So you're in support?
Yes.
All right. Anybody else? Secretary of State's office?
Hey, Chair Hoyle, Vice Chair Gilliam, members of the committee, my name is Rochelle Altman, and I serve as Legislative Director in the Secretary of State's office. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of SJR 4. This resolution amends Article 7, Section 1A of the Constitution to repeal age-based mandatory retirement of judges. Specifically, the resolution repeals a provision that requires, without exception, that a judge retire at the end of the calendar year in which he or she turns 75 years old. The resolution also amends Section 1A to delete other references to age-based mandatory retirement of judges. These changes will benefit both current and future judges. Currently, Oregon law has no mandatory retirement age for other public officials, including legislators, and there's also no mandatory retirement age for judges in the federal system. I would point out that four of the nine sitting judges on the U.S. Supreme Court are currently over the age of 75.
That's a problem.
Also of note, 17 states have no constitutional or statutory mandatory retirement age for judges, and two additional states have constitutional mandatory retirement ages for judges that are not enforced. Finally, I'd like to highlight that ORS 1.310 already provides that a judge's inability to perform judicial service may be the basis for mandatory retirement of judges, and that provision lays out in detail a process for the involuntary retirement of judges. Should SJR 4 become law, ORS 1.310 would be consistent with the Constitution. And as for the fiscal impact of SJR 4, as I understand, that's the particular focus of this committee. SJR 4 refers the resolution's proposed constitutional amendment to the people at the next general election. This means that the resolution's fiscal impact to the Secretary of State's office is the state's portion of incremental costs incurred for an already funded election. So the Secretary of State prepares and distributes the voter's pamphlet and collects a $500 filing fee for each statement in support or in opposition to a measure. And typically these fees cover slightly half of the costs for the Secretary of State's office to prepare the voter's pamphlet. The remaining costs are paid out of the general fund. At this time, the fiscal impact of SJR 4 to the Secretary of State's office is indeterminate. And that's because the costs of producing and distributing the voter's pamphlet are determined by the total number of initiatives and legislative referrals on the ballot, and also by the number of arguments submitted in support or opposition. And of course, we won't know the numbers until filing deadlines. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify on SJR 4, and I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Mm-hmm. Are there any questions? Okay, with that, I'd accept a motion. Representative Gilliam? Representative Smith Warner?
Madam Chair, I move SJR 4A to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved SJR 4A to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'll be a no vote on that today, primarily because of the fact that anything that diminishes the power of the legislature, I'm not particularly for. So I'll be a no.
Okay, well, we will...
Oh, there's one.
Okay, great. So then, we will call the roll, and we'll be taking the vote on SJR 4. Or yes. Okay. All right, and we'll have a recess. Session. With that, Zoe, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Mandatory retirement age.
You're in.
Can you give me a second?
Yep.
Sorry.
Yep.
No.
Representative McLean.
He's excused.
Representative Nose.
Aye.
Representative
Rayfield?
Yes.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Vice Chair Gillen?
No.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner?
Aye.
Chair Hoyle?
Aye. With that, the motion passes. And I close the public hearing and work session on SJR 4. With that, open up a work session on House Bill 3431. Would you please review the describe the measure? Representative Clem, would you like to come up and describe and testify on this bill?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3431 extends deadline for owner of Metolius River Resort site to notify Department of Land Conservation Development that owner has elected to seek approval of a small-scale recreation community, adds Clatsop County to list of counties eligible for siting of small-scale recreation community. I will direct your attention to the Dash A7 amendments. The Dash A7 amendments allow 5 additional years for owners of Metolius Resort site to apply to county for approval of small-scale recreation community, extends opportunity for small-scale recreation community to Clatsop County, stipulates that all land must be within at least 1/4 mile from nearest state park, and buildings or improvements must be located at least 1 mile from nearest state park. There's an emergency clause on this measure. We did receive a statement from the Legislative Fiscal Office. We have a no revenue impact. This measure, as amended, would need to go to Ways and Means.
Representative Clem, please identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm okay. Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21 here in Salem, and I'm trying to pull up that amendment as we speak. So the bill was first heard over in the House Rural Communities Land Use and Water Committee quite some time ago, and then sent down to you before the House committee deadlines occurred, because we were still in negotiations about the provisions of the bill. And I'm pleased to report that when I say we, I'm referring to the owners of the Metolius Resort site that was commonly known as the Metolian, and 1,000 Friends of Oregon and myself discussing sort of the bill as it left the House committee. And this amendment replaces the House bill. It actually takes us back to essentially what the current agreement was and law was in 2009, which was that the owners of the Metolius Resort site would be eligible for a transferable development opportunity to build their resort somewhere else. The list of places they could build was affixed at that time to counties that were the highest unemployment counties in the state, the bottom half of the state. And to that list in this amendment is added Clatsop County, which was not on the list as of that time of the bottom 18 high unemployment counties. It was not in the lowest half of the state of unemployment counties. And that's functionally the only change in the law from 2009, is just to add Clatsop County and then move the deadline out. The deadline will otherwise expire here in July, I believe it is, and then the TDOs will be off the books, period, if we don't do anything. And the point from the developer point of view, I think, that if they were here, they would tell you, is it was a really bad real estate market in in this last 5 years, so it was pretty hard to find a place to locate them no matter what, because the market was not particularly good. And two, the proximity to a metropolitan area is and an airport is usually pretty important in where you locate a resort. And the counties that were on the list were all quite far away from where the target market would be for people to want to go to a destination resort for the weekend, for example. And they were a little bit too far away for people to want to participate in that. So the bill now is ready to go from the both the owners of the TDO perspective, and I don't think they need to come up or want to come up particularly, but you could probably look behind me and see 1,000 friends saying they're neutral on this amendment as proposed to you.
All right, any questions? Representative Wilson, do you have a question, or are you just looking quizzical?
I'm just trying to refer to the dash 11s, and did I hear that there are
sevens.
Seven. Oh, okay. All right, sounds good. I'm fine.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
I'm sorry, I don't have the agenda in front of me. Can you tell me the bill number again?
It is 3431.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. 3431.
We're looking at the dash 7.
Yes. So with that, I...
That's a gotten step, is it not, Madam Chair?
Right. Yeah. Work a lot.
I believe so. With that, I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, with great gratitude for my friend, Representative Clem, being here in person, I move to adopt the Dash 7 amendment to House Bill 3431.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved to adopt the Dash...
Just a one moment. I sense he has one more thing to say.
And I forgot to part about the state park provision. That is a difference. There is language in here. Some folks, in thinking about Clatsop County, were a little bit worried about state parks, and that was not in the 2009 law. It says that any buildings cited here need to be at least 1/4 mile from a state park, and that the property line would be 1/4 mile and the buildings would be at least 1 mile from a state park. And I know the operating theory from the Matolian Resort originally won't be called Matolian anymore because it'll be somewhere else, but that they would use the $1.5 million donation to help potentially supplement ongoing natural resource related amenities nearby that the government has a hard time figuring out how to come up with the money to. So they thought they would donate to nearby parks or national forest money every year in lieu of what we currently do, which is ask resorts to basically build an on-site thing like a golf course. They would rather pay into keeping parks and trails and things like that up. So the goal here was from not have them too close to the park, that they're just getting to capitalize on the park, but if they do get nearby, their hope would be that they could help supplement park funding.
Thank you for that clarification. I think that eases a lot of our concerns.
I reaffirm my motion.
Okay. Vice Chair Gilliam reaffirms his motion to adopt the Dash 7 amendments, House Bill 3431. Is there discussion? Is there objection? If not, the motion passes. Another motion?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3431 with a due pass as amended recommendation and that the measure be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved House Bill 3431 with a due pass as amended recommendation and be referred to Ways and Means. Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Right here, Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to vote for the motion as a courtesy today. I haven't had it, and it's probably my fault, I haven't had a chance to actually study the issue that Representative Clem has raised. He's certainly correct that there's been a slow patch on construction lately, and this may very well be the most appropriate way of managing that.
Thank you. With that, is there any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. close the work session on House Bill 3431. Open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 294A. Aaron, will you describe the measure?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 294A provides Oregon Government Ethics Commission certain rulemaking authority to insist in enforcement of executive sessions provisions of public meeting laws. It comes to you with no fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Ron Burson, please come up and describe the measure.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, my name is Ron Burson. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. I'm here to speak to you today in favor of SB 294A. SB 294A would add ORS 192660 to ORS 244290, parentheses 2, giving the commission authority to promulgate administrative rules governing the proper use of executive sessions, with the exception of deferring the defining the term news media as used in 192660 subsection 4. The commission is in favor of passing this bill for the following reasons. Administrative rules would add clarity to the complex set of statutes used by over 1,700 jurisdictions throughout Oregon and many levels of government, as in state, county, city, and local governments. Executive session complaints over the past several years have outnumbered all other complaints filed with the commission. The commission believes in the majority of these cases, this is simply due to a lack of understanding of the statutes. This lack of clarity in the laws creates challenges in the commission's effort to fulfill its enforcement and educational missions. The commission believes the absence of rulemaking authority was an oversight when the commission was given the regulatory authority on executive sessions back in 1993. The commission cannot find one other example of an agency given regulatory authority over a section of law without administrative rule authority. This is an educational effort for the commission by clarifying again a set of complex laws. The commission appreciates your consideration of this bill. The clarity of administrative rules will help prevent inadvertent violations of executive session provisions of the public meeting laws by enhancing the commission's educational efforts. Thank you.
Are there any questions or comments? Representative Wilson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thank you for that. I wanted to talk about the news media aspect of this. I know that over time it's been a little complex in various jurisdictions in determining who is the news media, given the new news media that's out there. Could you help me understand exactly what this will do as it relates to that particular issue?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Wilson, the amended version is actually taking news media, the definition of news media, out of the administrative rulemaking authority. So the commission will not attempt to define news media through rule underneath this measure. The commission at this time is working with the Attorney General's office to try to look at this issue through an opinion, which we are waiting for a final version of. And we will continue to work with the media to try to understand who should be let in. I mean, I think that's what another important point is under news media, it is who they have to let in to the executive session. So, but this bill does not solve that problem. It actually sets that problem off to the side until we can do some more work. We're just not ready to define that at this time.
Okay.
Representative Wilson.
No, I don't have a follow-up, but I think before we go to a vote, I'd like to ask for a short recess.
Absolutely. Are there any other questions for? You might as well stay there. We're going to bring up your other bill right after this.
Well.
Yeah. Yes.
Given the last answer, I'm wondering if you're expecting that this statute is going to be temporary, or if somebody else is actually going to tell us or you how to determine the appropriate people to be allowed in during an executive session, or something else. Maybe I've missed it altogether.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnhart, I believe at this point the commission will continue to rely on what they've relied on in the past, is that what is news media and what should be in there, what has been actually written into statute on news media. It was written back in 1973. The opinion is giving the Attorney General opinion is giving, will give the commission some direction on how to essentially educate public bodies on who they should let in. Now, if you're going to ask me exactly along that continuum where the bright light is, that's where the difficulty's at. But I think that either on a case-by-case basis or through working with the media and the public bodies, trying to determine what that is, I just don't have that bright line today.
Okay. Could I follow up?
Yes.
So I think what you've just said is there's a statute on this topic. This bill would prevent you from writing rules which further explicate the statute.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Barnes, that's correct. There's a specific statute in 192.660, it's subsection 4, that talks about the requirement to allow news media into certain executive sessions. Okay. And at this time, what I'm saying is that this bill will allow the commission to have rulemaking authority on all the other subsections of 192.660 to promulgate rule and give some educational effort to those governing bodies, but not subsection 4.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. With that, we'll call a recess.
Okay.
And we're in a work session. So, Representative Smith Warner, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 294A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Smith Warner has moved Senate Bill 294A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern about this bill is that this is a local issue. But recognizing the integrity and the intention of the Ethics Commission, in addition to the confusion, I will be a yes today. But I wanted to get that concern on the record, and I thank you.
I very much appreciate that. Any other? Okay. With that, are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion passes. And I'll close work session on 294A. With that, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2058. Erin, will you describe the measure?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2058 was originally heard on February 18th. It removes the June 30th, 2015 sunset exempting registered lobbyists from reporting to Oregon Government Ethics Commission money spent on lobbying another registered lobbyist. The exemption does not apply if person lobbied is a legislative official, executive official, or member of state board or commission. There's an emergency clause on the measure. You have a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment extends the exemption until June 30th of 2017. You have a no revenue and a no fiscal impact on the -1 amendment.
Thank you. Mr. Burson, would you like to make a brief comment about this with the as to why the you were in opposition previously, but with the -1 amendments, why you would be supportive?
Chair Hoyle, I appreciate the opportunity to make those comments. I believe what the -1 does is it gives the agency the opportunity to work with the lobby and work with other stakeholders in Oregon to determine what is going to go on this brand new reporting system that we're going to come out with. Hopefully, the reporting system will make it much easier for the professional lobbyists and any lobbyist basically in the state to report, but finding out what areas need to be reported. I think the -1 allows us to come back in 17 with that information for you, and we'll come to a real consensus on what is going to be on those reports, what expenses are going to be filed, and from what source.
So thank you, Mr. Burson. So this simply extends the sunset on the bill we passed in 2013 to allow us time for you to get your online system up and work with the lobby to get this done. But my question would be, will expenses from lobby to public officials continue to be reported if we pass this bill?
Chair Hoyle, it will expenses from lobby to executive officials and legislative officials will continue to be reported during this sunset phase, yes, during this extension.
Great. And then the total amount companies, association, unions, and others they spend on lobbyists will still continue to be reported. Is that correct?
Chair Hoyle, that is correct. In the aggregate, they will essentially report the lump sum that they charge or they spend for lobbying. Yes.
Okay.
From the clients that hire lobbyists.
Right. So all of those things will still continue. This simply extends the sunset for the bill that we passed in 2013 until we can agree on what should be reported and how it should be reported, correct?
Chair Hoyle, that is correct.
Fantastic. Okay, any questions? Okay, with that, I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment to House Bill 2058.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved the -1 amendments to House Bill 2058. Any discussion? Any objections on the -1 amendments? With that, motion passes. Vice Chair Gilliam.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2058 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved House Bill 2058 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Close the work session on House Bill 2058. Okay, again?
Yep.
Okay, open a work session on Senate Bill 292.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 292 was originally heard on May 13th. It repeals duplicative statute regarding conflict of interest for planning commission members. It comes due with no revenue, no fiscal impact, and 30 aye votes from your Senate.
Brief statement, Mr. Burson?
Yes, very brief. I would just like to take a moment here to clear up some of the confusion on my part in the public hearing on the origin of this statute. And what I'd found out is this statute actually backdates the 1973 statutes that the created the Ethics Commission, because the first groups that the legislature believed needed some control on conflicts of interest were Planning Commission members, because they had made some decisions on areas that they might be developing themselves. And so the legislature put some conflict of interest provisions for planning commissioners, and in 1973 those were simply brought over to the ethics laws. When we talk about the ramifications from it, the current laws, the planning commissioners are held to the same level as everybody else, which is actually a stricter level than what this is. So that's why I'm here before you. Thank you.
Fantastic. With that, I would accept a motion. Vice Chair Smith Warner.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 292 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Smith Warner has moved Senate Bill 292 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Close work session on Senate Bill 292. With that, I will open the work session on Senate Bill 293.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 293 again was originally heard on May 13th. It extends exemption from statutory gift limit to include admission provided to or cost of food or beverage consumed by a relative of public official who accompanies a public official at reception, meal, or meeting. This measure has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Burson.
Yes. Again, briefly, this is another bill that's come over from the Senate with 30 aye votes. And what it is that the commission continually get phone calls from folks like yourselves that go out to these organizations' evening meetings or evening events to be honored in some way. And you're allowed to take your staff and you're allowed to take household members, but relatives was left out of the statute. And many times those relatives are not household members. They may be a college age child or something like that you would like to attend, and they're not covered underneath this. So they're not able to accept that meal and admission into the thing. So this clears up that oversight, I believe.
Are there any questions for Mr. Burson? Yes, Vice Chair Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ron, I'm not concerned about my spouse in this regard, but I have a brother who has an unbelievable capacity for alcoholic beverages, and I wonder if you would entertain an amendment in naming him by name.
Mr. Burson, as the chair, I would advise you not to do that.
Withdraw.
But thank you for withdrawing the question. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this would cover any relative of the public official who was invited to go along, would it? If I were to take my grandson along, that would work, even though he doesn't live with me?
Representative Hoyle, Representative Barnhart, that is correct. It will cover your relatives that are not in your household to be able to attend the event with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. With that, any other questions? All right. We just need a motion. How about to my left, Representative Gilliam?
To your left, Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 293 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved Senate Bill 293 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes. Close the work session on Senate Bill 293. And open a work session on House Bill 2178.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2178 was heard on February 16th and June 8th. The measure requires campaign finance statement to be filed within 2 business days. If aggregate amount of contributions equaling or exceeding $2,500 from single donors received during 14-day period immediately preceding the election. It does also adjust other filing deadlines for campaign finance statement, and there's an emergency clause on the measure. If you have a -5 amendment, it requires campaign finance statement to be filed within 2 business days after single contribution of $2,500 or more is received from donor or single expenditure is made of $2,500 or more. It restores reporting timeline during 42 days before election to 7 days for contributions under $2,500 and all independent expenditures. In addition, it establishes a 15-member task force on campaign finance reform, specifies membership charge and reporting requirement, defines staffing support from the Committee Services Office of Legislative Administration. This measure with a task force does need to go to Ways and Means, Madam Chair. So should you adopt the -5 amendment, the recommendation would be to send it to Ways and Means.
Thank you. With that, may I call up Dan Gilbert. Come on up. And someone from the Secretary of State's office. Pick who. Thank you. With that, we had this bill up previously. Well, that's fine. We had this bill up previously, and there were a number of questions that people had. So, and at the time, Mr. Gilbert, who is the drafter, was not available. So I think having you here would be helpful. Also, we had asked for some information to be brought back to the committee. So who would like to report on that? Whoever would, identify yourself for the record and start explaining.
Okay. Rochelle Altman, Legislative Director from the Secretary of State's office. So as we understood last time we met on this bill, Representative McLean posed a series of hypotheticals, and so I think that's what you're referring to.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll go through those and then provide you our response. So the first question was, if Political Committee A makes an expenditure that it reports as an in-kind contribution to Candidate B, does the in-kind contribution automatically show up in ORSTAR in Candidate B's account as an in-kind contribution from Political Committee A? So the answer is no, it does. That in-kind contribution does not automatically show up in the candidate's ORSTAR account as an in-kind contribution. So then the next question, is it correct that Candidate B has to take some action to report the in-kind contribution from the political committee? Yes, that is correct. The candidate must report the in-kind contribution in the ORSTAR system. The next question, is there a time frame under which political committee A, in the above example, must notify the recipient of the in-kind contribution? The answer, yes. The political committee who makes the in-kind contribution must notify the recipient of the in-kind contribution within 48 hours after the giving political committee reports the in-kind contribution in ORSTAR. So they have 48 hours after reporting in ORSTAR to notify the recipient of the in-kind contribution. And then the final question, after the political committee who benefits from the in-kind contribution receives the notification from the political committee making the in-kind contribution, what is the time frame under which the recipient must report the in-kind contribution in ORSTAR? And the answer is, under current law, if we're talking about under current law, during the last 6 weeks leading up to an election, the recipient has seven calendar days after the contribution is received to report. If we are looking at what the answer would be under the introduced version of House Bill 2178, the recipient would have two business days after the contribution is received if the two-day threshold is met, which in the introduced version was $2,500 in the aggregate of contributions. And then if we're talking about under the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2178, if the contribution is received within the last 14 days before an election and the $2,500 non-aggregate threshold is met, then again, the recipient would have two business days after the contribution is received to report the in-kind contribution. I'm happy to take follow-up questions.
Do we have follow-up questions for the panel? Yes, Representative Kenner.
I note that the Dash 5 has an emergency clause, and I'd like to understand that.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Kenner, the emergency clause would allow the task force to meet this fall, and it would also allow the Secretary of State's office to expend staff and financial resources on preparing ORSTAR for new reporting requirements.
Thank you.
Any other questions? With that, I would accept a motion. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendment to House Bill 2178.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 2178. Is there discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What an excellent execution of the motion. And I would request a short recess.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Committee. To order. With that,
questions?
Yes, Representative Kenema.
I guess going back and reflecting on your testimony, you said that in independent expenditure, after they've reported it to ORSTAR, they have 2 days in which to do this. Am I missing that? Did I get that incorrect?
Yeah. Chair Hoyle, Representative Kenema.
Thank you.
I referred to in-kind contributions.
Yes, thank you.
To independent expenditures.
Yes. And after they report it to ORSTAR, then they have 2 days to report it.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Kenema, I believe, is it correct, you are asking after a political committee makes an in-kind contribution to a candidate or political committee, and they report that in ORSTAR, how long do they have to notify the recipient?
That is correct.
They have 48 hours notify the recipient of the in-kind contribution.
And a follow-up question. Yes. And how soon do they have to report it to ORSTAR?
The recipient? The candidate? The recipient?
No, on the...
The committee making the in-kind contribution?
Yes.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Kenemer, during the last 6 weeks before an election, they would have 7 days to report the expenditure prior under current law. Prior to that 6-day period, they would have 30 days. And then right now, that's the extent of the reporting deadlines.
So changes does not change existing. That portion is not changed from existing practice.
For which period?
For their reporting to ORSTAR in 7 days.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Kenemer, under the introduced version, reporting of expenditures is not affected.
Yeah.
However, under the proposed -5 amendments, 2-day reporting would potentially apply to both contributions above the threshold and to expenditures above the threshold.
So, Ms. Altman, I think to follow up on Representative Kenemer's questions, currently it would be 7 days before in the last part of the election before anyone could see either an in-kind contribution or an actual direct contribution. What this would do is if there were an in-kind contribution, say a certain group provided, paid canvassers or phone calling, that organization would have 48 hours to report it to the candidate. The candidate would then have 48 hours to report that to ORSTAR. So effectively, what this would be doing is, would this be bringing this down to where we can go from 7 days to 4 days at the outside, or would the in-kind contribution have to be reported in 2 days by the party making the in-kind contribution and also report to the candidate? My understanding is that at the outside it would be 4 days, brought down from 7, but for the candidate itself it would be 48 hours. Is that correct? I'm not sure that clarified in any bit, but
yeah. Okay. Chair Hoyle, I'm going to ask my colleague from our elections division to help respond.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Hertel, and I'm an employee at the Secretary of State's Office, State Elections Division. I'm a compliance specialist with the campaign finance team. With regard to your question about the reporting requirements, in your example, where you were citing an organization and the notification requirement, the current statute that talks about the 48-hour reporting applies to candidates, political committees, or petition committees that make an expenditure, and that's where the notification comes in. So the 48 notification applies to committees. Another organization outside of being a political committee, they don't have that same 48-hour notification requirement, but if a committee has knowledge of that information, then the date that they have knowledge is sets forth figuring out what the deadline is to report that in-kind contribution.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
I believe
also, I just would say that the threshold has to be met, the $2,500, and that's where the 2-day reporting comes in, versus if I do an in-kind contribution for your committee as a PAC or as an organization and it's less than $2,500, then you're on the 7-day reporting.
Right. Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none.
We have a motion
on the table. So, with no further discussion, is there any objection? The motion is to adopt the -5 amendments to House Bill 2178. The initial bill, we received feedback from a number of sources that really clarified what the intent of this was. So I think that this has made it a lot better. So that's the -5 amendment. And the motion is to adopt the -5 amendment. So is there any objection to that? Seeing none, the motion passes. Accept the next motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2178 with a do pass as amended recommendation and that the measure be referred to Ways and Means.
Vice Chair Smith-Warner has moved House Bill 2178 with a do pass as amended recommendation and the measure be referred to Ways and Means. Is there a discussion? Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Very few points to be gained by arguing against transparency, but let me offer maybe a couple. And one of those things is, as a owner of media, until a candidate or a committee is required to submit election day expenditures via ORSTAR by 5 o'clock on election day, we're never going to be able to have complete transparency here. One of my concerns is the fact that these rules are getting so complex, and I alluded to this the other day, it's getting so complex that we're no longer going to be able to utilize friends or amateurs to do this. Ultimately, we're going to be forced to hire professionals to do this because the liability and the trouble is just getting too difficult even to ask your best of friends to do this for you. And so that's concerning me as well. You know, we always have to ask what problem is this really trying to address, this new layer? What does it really do? What is it supposed to do? And I am concerned especially about expenditures. I don't really know what we're getting at when we are talking about reporting expenditures just prior to Election Day. Perhaps the most suspicious would certainly want to know who gave to us in the amounts to trigger this activity. But as far as who we spent it with or what we did, I fail to see the propriety of asking that. So with all that said, I'm still going to support it today. Like I say, overall, there are no points to be gained by voting against transparency. But I just think that we're flirting with overdoing it constantly in this whole issue of campaign finance. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Gilliam.
The representative covered my comment. Thank you.
Any other comments? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. And close the work session on House Bill 2178. Okay, we will not, we do not have the revenue statement on House Bill 2275. So we'll carry that over till our next time. Is that it?
That's it.
And with that, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you so much for your time.
That's
it. Is adjourned. Thank you so much for your time.
That's it.